This Israel report is brought to you by the Blue Agency. Your Israel property is in good hands. Owning properties in Israel can be a great investment, but challenging to manage if you are based abroad. The Blue Agency will manage every aspect of your property, finding and vetting tenants, maintaining your property and getting it rental ready, negotiating contracts and collecting rentals, reporting back to you regularly. The Blue Agency has built a reputation for trust and confidentiality over 20 years. The Blue Agency, your Israel property is in good hands. Contact us at www.theblueagency.com.
The Israel Report for the latest news and insights with Anthony Reich.
Boker Tov, Anthony. I greet you on day 347 of Operation Swords of Iron. Can you believe that we have come this far?
I cannot believe that we're on day 347 of Swords of Iron, and I particularly cannot believe that our hostages still remain in Gaza for 347 days. It's just inconceivable. And when I think back to my response to the situation on October the 7th, and I remember feeling how desperately we needed to get the hostages back within the next day or two at least in order to allow them to get their medication and to be able to survive in relatively normal circumstances, thinking about the young and thinking about the elderly and thinking about the sickly. And now, nearly a year later, it's just indescribable that they could still be there. Really, it is. A bit of rain in Israel today. I'm not quite sure if it qualifies as the Yoreh, which is the first rain of the season, but certainly some rain across Israel today, and indeed apparently in Gaza as well, and this has created some chatter on some of the Gazan, the Arabic language social media sites about the situation of people in Gaza and to what extent they have protection against the upcoming winter weather, because of course in Israel it is wet during the winter, and so there will need to be some work done in order to ensure that people can be protected. Also, some interesting chatter on the social media sites about some Gazans who've used sand to build houses to protect themselves against the element, and this has become a thing. I'm not exactly sure how it's done, but apparently there are some videos on social media that people who are interested in that sort of thing can watch and build little houses out of sand.
Interesting. Anthony, I had this thought, and this was after the last hostages were murdered by Hamas. And, you know, they seem to be kind of on their own to some degree in the tunnels. And I was thinking about, you know, hostages that are kind of let loose in the tunnels and left to fend for themselves versus hostages that were you know, actually being held captive in private residences. Do we have any of that intel?
I'm not sure that many of them are really being let loose. I think that when you say hostages are on their own, I think that we had one situation of a hostage who was discovered on his own after his guard decided to escape, essentially. And I think that that was as a result of the imminent arrival of IDF troops. They could hear people in the area, and that particular guard decided to escape in order not to be captured. But the instructions that the guards apparently have been given is that if they hear IDF troops in the vicinity, they should simply execute their hostages. And that seems to have been the situation that took place with the last event that we had, where the six bodies were returned to Israel. It seems as if they were executed largely as a result of the imminent arrival of IDF troops in that area and carrying out the most recent instruction, which is don't let them loose and just simply execute them. And that seems to be in the situation. So I'm not sure that there are hostages running loose in the tunnels. And if there are, I'm not sure how they would navigate themselves around there, because
it's impossible.
The labyrinth of tunnels seems to be so complex and so difficult to find your way around. And of course, bearing in mind that it's dark and there's no air, and you know all the conditions are just working against you, it's difficult for me to understand how they would be able to survive and get their way out of there. I think most of them, at least those that are currently alive, are being well guarded, very, very closely guarded. And I suspect that most of them are in tunnels right now as opposed to being held in private homes. But, of course, we don't know for sure, at least not in the public. The information hasn't been released as to what the Secret Service know about the current situation of the hostages in Gaza.
All right. Well, I guess time will tell. Anthony, there remains little clarity regarding the firing of a ballistic missile towards Israel from Yemen on Sunday. I wouldn't even say towards, I'd say into. So what do we know?
Well, we didn't have a chance to talk about this yesterday, and it was a massive event that took place on Sunday morning. In the early hours of the morning, people, I'm sure, will now be aware that this at least one ballistic missile was fired from Yemen into Israel, and there were sirens in the central part of Israel, particularly around the area of the airport, which was closed down very, very briefly while events took place around the interception of that missile. There is a lot of lack of clarity, and the official bodies in Israel, the IDF and the Secret Services, haven't really helped us to clarify, to help our understanding as to exactly what happened. We know that at least one ballistic missile was fired. There are some reports that suggest there may even have been more than one, but at least for now, it is our belief that a single missile was fired from somewhere from northern Yemen. Such missiles need between 12 and 15 minutes to reach central Israel after they've been fired. And there are a number of detection stages along the way for a missile like that. For example, when the missile is erected for launch, it is erected in an area that should be openly visible to Israeli and American reconnaissance satellites, and that should already trigger a warning. When the missile itself is launched, there is massive heat that's generated by the engines, which should be detected by the American Missile Warning Satellite Network, and that information should be relayed to the IDF. There are several radar systems to detect and track the missile when it is on the way to Israel, which include American and Israeli Navy systems for tracking along the Red Sea. And they should all be sending information to Israel in order for Israel to be able to understand what's going on. This also includes a radar tracking system located in the Negev, which is apparently operated by American troops. And then finally, of course, Israel has its Arrow anti-missile system, which has a radar that detects the missile incoming and, of course, fires off an Arrows missile in the event that such an incoming missile, an attack like this, needs to be detected. Now, I don't know how many of those systems actually worked and how many of them failed along the way, because what we do know is that at the end of the day, the interceptions, if indeed there were interceptions, took place in the skies of Israel. There were certainly fragments that fell. One we know fell in the Modi'in area. There were fragments that fell just outside the area of the airport. Those were reported. There were even some fires reported as a result of that, the falls of those fragments. And again, we don't know whether those fragments were actually fragments of the incoming missile or whether they were fragments of Israel's anti-missile system, the Iron Dome, for example, that might have exploded and then the fragments fell. There were certainly those who reported seeing explosions above the skies in the central part of Israel. And so what we understand is that the Arrows anti-missile system ultimately did not manage to intercept the incoming missile in outside of the Earth's atmosphere, which is really what it's designed to do. There was some sort of a failure where that's concerned. And there are even some reports that the incoming missile just simply disintegrated on its own, that it wasn't even intercepted by an Israeli anti-missile system, but that somehow, just as it got into the skies above Israel, that it somehow disintegrated. I don't know which of those stories are accurate or inaccurate. A lot of it seems to be speculation. There were people who said they definitely saw interceptions above the skies of Israel, which may indicate that there were Iron Dome anti-missile systems that somehow managed to intercept the incoming missile. but it's unclear. So all we know is that we were extremely fortunate to get away without any injuries to people, any deaths or injuries. There was some damage caused to property. There were some people who were injured as a result of running towards their safe rooms. They were all dealt with. As far as death or injury from the missile itself, none were reported. And I think that there's a lot of investigation that needs to go on in order to understand exactly how this happened. But what we understand is that this Houthi missile that was fired into Israel was supposed to be something of a revenge attack against Israel's attack against the Houthis, which was in response to the previous Houthi attack on Tel Aviv. So this seems to be a backwards and forwards thing, but at least for now, the Houthis seem to be happy that they've carried out their revenge. I don't know how many of these Shahab 3 long-range missiles they have within their armory, within the missile stock that they keep, but certainly they will be using them if they need to. And I think that Israel will need to be a little better at being ready and being able to intercept these missiles and being able to track them before they reach the skies of Israel.
Anthony, why do you think Israel is tolerating this? That they haven't, certainly as far as we know in the diaspora, Israel hasn't retaliated for these attacks.
Yet. And I say yet because at the moment, Israel hasn't said that they will be retaliating. There was a statement made by the prime minister who suggested that the Houthis will not get off with this particular one, very likely indicating that there may well be plans at retaliation. But I think that Israel operates more strategically. In other words, it doesn't feel the need to necessarily retaliate in order just to show that it retaliates. But I think when Israel retaliates, it needs to be a lot more meaningful. It needs to really do some damage to be able to prevent future attacks like this in the future. It needs to retaliate in order to send a particular political message about how Israel operates. So I think that this retaliation, if indeed it comes, will need to be well thought out and, of course, well executed. And we've seen in the past that Israel's responses to attacks like this are usually very pinpoint and very not general. It needs to be very specific and it needs to be aimed in a particular way that the message that is sent cannot be in any doubt whatsoever. So we will see how all of this pans out. I don't know whether there will be a retaliation, but I'm sure that when there is one, we will get to find out about it.
What's happened with the shipping crisis? Are ships still being diverted elsewhere?
Well, they are, because ships are still being attacked. And I mean, there's been a number of pictures recently shown of ships that were taken over by the Houthis already some months ago, which have now been literally used as Houthi bases. And these ships, one of them even reported to be owned by an Israeli shipping magnate. Some of those ships, I saw a report today which said that one of the ships that had been taken over has finally now, after all the damage and there was fire and there was a lot of damage done to the ship, has now been pulled into a safe zone, which will allow the owners of that ship to take care of it. But my understanding is that there is still a significant number of ships who will still not sail through the Red Sea because of the risk to the ships by Houthi attacks. So that's still causing quite a significant impact on the world economy as a result of the ships having to sail around southern Africa in order to get from the east to the west. And yes, there are still ships that are within the crosshairs for sure.
It's like a game of chess. You look at all the ships being diverted to, Hamas ally, which is South Africa, right? And it's all being diverted here. It's when you start looking at the game players, it's crazy to see the dynamics. Are you able to do that, Anthony?
Well, it's difficult to put all of the things together because we don't necessarily know all of the relationships and how they fit together.
Yeah.
But, you know, and of course, there are a lot of conspiracy theories as well. For example, the one that you just mentioned, which cannot necessarily be proven, that, you know, the result of the Houthis diverting ships away from the Red Sea is to effectively bring more economy to South Africa. And that's why the South Africa, or at least that's one of the reasons why the South African government is very enthusiastic about supporting Hamas. They have many other reasons to be enthusiastic about supporting Hamas, but that may well be one of them. And, you know, numerous other similar things that people try and link together, which may or may not necessarily link together. But, you know, I think that there are people who are paid good money to draw all the lines and to link all the dots together in order to try and work things out. It's difficult to know whether the South African government find it a good idea to support Hamas because, or partially because, they're getting so much good economy from ships sailing around Southern Africa. But we can't rule it out, right?
Absolutely. And I think that the worst thing that Israel could possibly do is undermine the enemy. They are not brainless,
Or underestimate them.
Exactly,
yeah.
And that seems to be
underestimate them.
Consistent, is that Israel is constantly underestimating the enemy. You know, you're talking about very sophisticated, they're using very sophisticated methods as well as very strategic ones.
Mm. I mean, I'm not sure that Israel is necessarily underestimating its enemy. I think that Israel has given the enemy a lot of credit, sometimes even too much credit. But the style of operating is really to assume that Iran is behind everything that is being done. Iran is very sophisticated. Who would have thought that the Houthis, out of all people, would be able to be launching ballistic missiles from Yemen towards Israel? It seems inconceivable that a group like the Houthis would be able to do that. And yet, with Iran's support, they are able to undertake some quite sophisticated actions, including the ballistic missiles. And so where Iran is involved and where Iran's finance and influence is clear, we can never underestimate anything.
Anthony, that is unfortunately where we have to leave it this morning, but I do look forward to speaking to you tomorrow. We're going to try and take you a little bit earlier tomorrow as well, if that's possible. Thank you.
We'll do our best. Absolutely.
Thank you so much and have a wonderful day.
That Israel Report was brought to you by the Blue Agency. Your Israel property is in good hands.
Hi, it's Barry Cohen from the Blue Agency. Israel is currently facing one of its biggest challenges ever. All of Klal Yisrael is praying for the safety of our soldiers and the return of the hostages. We hope and pray that our soldiers and security forces will prevail, and that they will all return home speedily and triumphant. We hold the hands of our clients and friends who have children serving in Tzahal, who are protecting Israel and Jews around the world. May Hashem protect us all.